Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, I'm joined today by two very accomplished women, both award winners in their field. Coming up in the second half of today's show, I'll be joined by Elizabeth Galen Baker. She's an award-winning writer and filmmaker and has worked on 11 independent films before she wrote and directed her first documentary called When Buffalo Roam. She's also written a book called Gifts of Gratitude, The Joyful Adventures of a Life Well Lived. And she's in the process of making a new documentary film. So we're going to hear all about that coming up in the second half of today's show. And interestingly enough, she did not get into Hollywood and filmmaking until she was later in life, until her sons left home. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Northwest award-winning writer Christina McMorris to the show. Her new book is called The Pieces We Keep. It's about the deepest bonds that are never broken. And she has a very interesting background, too. And we'll find out more about that from Christina when I bring her on. But I'll tell you that she is a critically acclaimed author, the recipient of more than 20 national literary awards. She lives right here, as I said, in the Pacific Northwest with her husband and two sons. And this is her third novel, following the widely praised Letters from Home and Bridge of Scarlet Leaves. And you can find out more about her at ChristinaMcMorris.com. Christina, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Very pleased to have you on the show. We were joking just before we came live that I was saying I'd watched a lot of the videos that you've done. You've done a lot of video interviews. You've been in the business, if you will, to some extent for many number of years. And you joked and said, you're the only child actor who never went through rehab.
Yeah, it's my claim to fame. It's the running joke in our house, for sure.
So let's just find a little bit more about your background, and then we'll talk about the book and writing and all that good stuff. But you had actually, when you were a kid, you had your own TV show. You were hosting a TV show, right?
Right. I started that when I was 9 years old and did that for about 5 or 6 years. So sort of a strange way to grow up, as you can imagine, you know, being in elementary school and filming a weekly show on Mondays, I would get my script. Tuesdays, I would memorize it, and Wednesdays, I would film at the local KATU station, which is an ABC affiliate, and then I would hang out with the newscasters and the meteorologists and play with the clouds with their magic pens. It was sort of strange, but very fun.
A kid's dream, I would think.
Probably.
And then you dabbled into acting. You were in quite a few films, I understand, independent and major motion pictures.
That's right. I thought that I would just get out of the business completely and live a semi-normal life, whatever that means. And then it was when I went to college in California, in Southern California at Pepperdine, that I ended up falling back into the business for a while by mistake, and had a really enjoyable time and did some films and came back to Portland ultimately. And then I owned a wedding and event planning business for about 6 years and also did a lot of PR work. And so because of the wedding business, I ended up falling again. Somehow I keep tripping back into the business, and I hosted a weekly wedding show that was in Oregon and Washington for the WB for about 6 years or so.
Mm-hmm. So then tell us how you tripped into writing this book. This is a very interesting story. Again, you wanted to write a recipe book, share recipes right. from your grandmother. So
I'm the accidental Jill of all trades, sort of. Apparently, I don't really plan my path very well because I keep finding a new path to take.
I have to say, it sounds like the path is planned for you.
I think I have some sort of faith in that, too, that I don't worry too much because somehow good things, we've been very fortunate, our family, and health is good, and you can't ask for more than that. And so good things have been coming our way, and they've been very fun and unexpected. In the case of the family cookbook, like you mentioned, what started out as a Christmas gift for my grandmother and really for all of the grandkids in the family, I put together a family cookbook with my grandmother's favorite recipes that she had collected and created over decades. And I know a lot of families do that, especially
right.
for holidays.
Right.
And I went to visit my grandmother for a weekend and almost as an afterthought decided to put her biographical section in the book, thinking the grandkids would really enjoy reading more about her life. And when we spent that afternoon together, she ended up sharing that she and my late grandfather, whom I was very close to, but he had passed away about 20 years before now anyway, mm-hmm. that they had only dated twice during World War II, had dated two times, but exchanged letters for the entire war. They were married for 50 years until he passed away.
Wow.
And then she asked me if I'd like to see the letters. And she pulled them out of the closet, and every one of those beautiful, wrinkled, yellowed pages from a 19-year-old sailor who didn't know he'd be coming home tomorrow just completely moved me. And ultimately, what I did not realize at the time, but it changed the course of my life.
Because, of course, you decided to write a book about it.
Exactly, because that's what you want to do right out of the gate as an author, you know, is tackle World War II, where people can tell you that you're wrong because they're still alive and they
right.
went through it. So I did. I ended up thinking, wow, this would make a really good movie, because I am ashamed to say it, that I was barely a reader, let alone a creative writer at the time. I clearly had a lot of blissful ignorance at the time. But I was a storyteller, I think, because of growing up in the business and seeing how movies were made. And I think of them as being somewhat similar. And so for me, I saw it as a movie in my head that it would be their courtship, however, new characters, replacing them, of course,
mm-hmm.
and fictionalizing it and turning it into a Cyrano de Bergerac story where you have a soldier who falls in love through letters, but it's a different girl writing back and he doesn't know which one he's in love with. And I thought, wow, that's a movie I would go see. You know, I
right.
love that time period. I love the music and the fashion and the romance, of how we see it now, of course, is the romance of the
sure,
era.
Sure.
And so I ended up sitting down one day. I was pregnant with my second child. I was high on hormones, apparently, and I thought, if I'm creating life, then a book seemed pretty simple. So I sat down at my computer, and I started chapter one, having really no clue what I was doing, but knew that I had a passionate story to tell, and it became a labor of love. And it became my debut novel, Letters from Home.
And, you know, that's so special on so many levels. I mean, first of all, to have these wonderful letters from your grandmother. I actually have one that my great-grandfather sent to my great-grandmother in World War
I. Oh, wow.
Just one. But so I understand that, you know, how precious that kind of thing is. But I'm interested in what your grandmother thought in the book when the book was finished.
It's so funny because I was very excited to share with her the final copy of it. And because my grandmother is the sweetest woman and she is so even-keeled and pleasant, and when I showed her the book, you know, she's not the kind that does cartwheels.
Right.
And yet she said, oh, that's so lovely, dear. I think it's pretty much what I got for every accomplishment. And I thought, well, the woman has lived through World War and Great Depression, so there's not much that's going to rattle her one way or the other.
Sure.
And yet the day that I got to call her and say that Reader's Digest had condensed it into a version, which I joke about because I know that she grew up with Reader's Digest, and that one actually got her a little excited.
I think, don't you think it is the generation, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because they did go through so much and so much
yeah.
hardship and not knowing from one day to the next what was going to happen, and they do kind of take things in their stride.
I absolutely agree with that, and I think that's why, you know, I have such an enormous respect for that generation, and it grew 100 times when I started writing this novel, and I think that's one of the best benefits that I've gained personally from this experience, has been opening my eyes to what these people went through, not just on the battle lines, but on the home front as well, and how much they sacrificed, and the fear that they really united, you know, as a country, and then in general, and then waiting for those letters to come in that sometimes could take 2 months, and
right.
not knowing if that person was alive for 2 months versus today, where we are fortunate enough to have better communication.
Yeah, you can understand why they would hold on to those letters, because they were very precious.
Absolutely.
So you just made a comment that, you know, people will critique anybody who writes historically now, you know, if they were alive at that time. All three of your books talk about World War II. I know the current one is set in contemporary times, but it kind of flips back to World War II as well. Tell us a little bit about how you approach the research to that.
Mm-hmm. I have found that I love research. I did not realize that when I started.
That's a good job.
I mean, when I think back and think, oh my goodness, it's just the same that you look back at your teenage years and think, oh, you just want to go and kind of smack yourself a little bit and think, oh, well, open your eyes. At the time, I really thought that I was only going to research just enough to get by. And how silly of me to think that I could do that. But secondly, how much I fell in love with the research and how much I learned through it, which is what has inspired each one of my novels. Every time I think I'm going to break away from doing World War II in my stories, I end up coming across another amazing historical fact that I think, how do people not know this? How did I not know this happened?
Right.
And it ends up inspiring a new story because it's so different from the last book.
Right.
And so for me, I've also, aside from having to do the textbook research where we highlight and you feel like it's in a 500-page, you know, probably thesis paper or term paper at least, I ended up doing things that were much more personally fulfilling, that were exciting, that I can look back and be proud of. I've ridden in a B-17 bomber, for example. I've gone on a pilgrimage to Manzanar War Relocation Camp, which, of course, interned the Japanese Americans during World War II, and interviewed countless veterans of mm-hmm. World War II as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some very interesting stories there. And you just mentioned the internment camp. Your second book actually was about two brothers, right?
Right.
And the internment camp situation.
Yeah, it was inspired by two brothers who I knew one of them, and he is Japanese American, and he once shared with me that he and his brother in Japan had actually served for the two different countries. One served for Japan and one for the U.S. And I was fascinated by that account, and I thought, wow, this could make a really good story. And if I fictionalize this, of course, it reminded me of, in America anyway, about the Civil War and about how overnight, you know, the North and the South were told that they were enemies.
Right, right.
Regardless if you lived, you know, across some arbitrary line. And so I thought, well, this would be a really interesting story to tell. And as I started researching, I came across a very obscure mention of roughly 200 non-Japanese spouses who lived in the camps voluntarily. Now, as being half Japanese myself, I was shocked by this, that I had never heard of that. And yet it also, common sense kicks in and says, wow, of course that would happen on some occasion, especially if you were married or mm-hmm. if you had a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a mother, you would follow them into the camp. And so, as, you know, I can understand that as a mother myself, for sure. And so that ends up inspiring Bridge of Scarlet Leaves.
Now, interesting, when I was watching you on the video, because, you know, I do remember some time ago reading a story on this, and, you know, they said that they did, the wives were allowed to go live, the kids were there to keep that family unit together. But you made the statement that actually pulled families apart because of the structure of the camp.
Absolutely. And there were also, I think there were two things involved when you mentioned that. One is that I also found a mention of orphans that had been adopted into an American family, that they were of Japanese descent. And yet, if they were 1/16th Japanese, which is incredible if you think about that, who in this country is not 1/16th of something, you know, that's been an enemy of the state at one point?
Right, right.
And so, I mean, we're all Irish, of course, you know, in some way, especially on St. Patrick's Day. And so I thought, wow, you know, they would actually take that child away from that family. And I can't imagine as a mother how that would feel to put mm-hmm. them on a bus and know that they are going out into the desert and you really have no idea how they are going to be taken care of. As far as what you mentioned in the camp, the family structure really did, from what I understand and what I've learned from talking to people, it really did break down, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, because the Japanese unit is a family. So much of the communication happened at the dinner table. You know, it's about the beauty of the food. It's the savoring the food and speaking, you know, eating with your chopsticks, which, of course, you can't eat too quickly. And yet in the camps, it was very much a mass herding kind of style where you would stand in line and eat as you go through, you know, you go through the buffet line. And the kids started eating with their friends, which, of course, is heavenly for any child.
Right, right.
And, you know, you don't have to eat with your parents anymore. And the parents would start eating with their friends. And you can imagine how that would start breaking down the family structure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've written some fascinating stories here. And we're going to talk about the latest book when we come back. We're going to take a very quick break. The latest story is called The Pieces We Keep. And it is very highly acclaimed, as are your other two books. My guest in this segment is Christina McMorris. She's an award-winning author. And you are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Christina McMorris. She is an award-winning author. She's won more than 20 accolades for her literary fiction. And her new book is called The Pieces We Keep. But before we get into this, Christina, you have some great news you just shared with me during the commercial break. Share it with our listeners.
See, when we're not on the air, I share all the good stuff. No, I'm excited. My debut novel, Letters from Home, became a bestseller, a number one in historical fiction. And so that was very exciting. Also, my anthology, which I was a part of, called A Winter Wonderland. I had a novella in that, and that was actually last year on the New York Times list for about 7 weeks.
Awesome.
So lots to celebrate in our house.
Oh, yeah, lots to celebrate. So let's find out about this book, The Pieces We Keep. This just came out last month, right?
Yes, just a couple of weeks ago. So I'm running on fumes, but really in a good way. In a good way. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, adrenaline is a good thing.
Exactly.
So give us a synopsis of this book. I know that this, like all of your stories, is inspired by actual events.
Right, and this one is no different in that way, but very different story-wise. It was inspired by a couple true stories. The story in the contemporary chapters is essentially about a 7-year-old boy who suddenly suffers from violent recurring night terrors all about dying in a plane crash during World War II. And that was inspired by a national news segment that you may have seen a few years ago. And from there, his behavior starts to worsen in the story, and his mother, who does not believe in any of this, really has to put her skepticism aside in order to help save him. And in doing so, she begins to unravel a mystery that traces back to a true account of Nazi saboteurs who were dropped off by U-boat on the east coast of America in 1942.
And so, and as you said, this is in contemporary times. So how difficult was it to flip backwards and forwards between contemporary times and talking about what happened in World War II?
Right. Well, one of the things that I was very concerned about going into a novel with dual timelines, which I had not yet done before, to go back and forth every 6 pages or so, you know, the chapters go back and forth. The font at least changes back and forth, which is nice. I was thrilled the publisher was willing to do that because I think it helped ground the reader into what time frame they're in and not jolt them. But I was worried about changing chapters back and forth in that I would never want the reader to feel jarred. And so one thing that I wanted to do was to make sure that there was some fluidity as you unravel the mystery elements throughout the story and connect the two the two timelines. And by to do that, what I did is the last sentence of every chapter ends up echoing the first sentence in the next chapter. And so even though you're in a different timeline, there is still the same feel or a similar situation that that character is facing, even though they're 60, 70 years apart. Right. The other challenge I wanted to make sure that I conquered, which I hope I did, is that I wanted to make sure the stakes were just as high in the contemporary chapters as the historical, because I know that World War II chapters, just inherently, the stakes are so high for the whole world, let alone the characters, which is often life or death. And to put those right next to a chapter of contemporary conflicts, I think can be very challenging. And I never wanted the reader to be tempted to skim those current day chapters.
Right, right. So I read that when you started writing this, you didn't necessarily have the beliefs that you were writing about. Did you change that thought process as you went along as you were writing?
You know, I really was raised with a very open mind about just possibilities,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily knowing, of course, that we are so hungry for tangible proof today for everything we believe in. And for me, I think it was a good journey to go through and reminding myself that you don't always need proof to have faith. And when I say faith, that's in all aspects of life. That even includes love, something that you cannot prove. And you know, as any parent knows, that is, love is something that is very, very real, especially for your child or the relationships you're in, whether you're married or the people that you care about, your family. And yet, how do you prove that? And so I think it's a good exercise in that way of just keeping an open mind of what's possible, and yet we just don't maybe fully understand yet.
Right, right. And your main character, Audra, questions her beliefs along the way consistently. So, and then you have another character, Vivian, who questions her views of love and marriage change throughout the course of the book. And, I was thinking, I saw an interview the other day with Emma Thompson, the actress, and somebody said to her, I heard that you now think marriage gets easier as you get older. Why? And she said, because you get progressively deafer. And and if he's doing something that irritates me, I just take out my contacts and everything becomes deliciously fuzzy.
I love her in every aspect. She is wonderful.
I love her too. Such a smart lady.
And how true. No, really, I think that was very fun for me to do, too. I've been with my husband now for 20 years, and so I've been able to look back and think, wow, you know, how you grow in a long-term relationship with anyone is, to me, so interesting. And when I spoke to my grandmother about my late grandfather and about their relationship and courting, and of course the romantic in me asked her, so was it just so romantic being at the train station and welcoming him home? And uh-huh. It's very Hollywood-like, where it's all sepia-toned, of course. And she said it was so interesting to me because it wasn't the answer I expected. And she said, no, we were not in love yet. I thought it was love, but it wasn't. We did not fully know each other yet. It was infatuation. It grew to be love when we were actually in the same house, being challenged by everyday conflicts and overcoming them together and getting through the ups and downs of marriage. That is true love.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives me chills now because that is, I think, very, very wise words.
Yes, yes. Your characters are known for being very strong, very strong characterization. What goes into developing a character for you?
Ooh, it's probably everyone I've ever met, so you'll probably be in the next book as well. There'll be a little bit of Vicky sprinkled in with your lovely accent. I think it really is. The characters become very real to me in that I'm not one of those authors that hears the voices in my head, and I always joke that they probably need a different pill that day or a therapist or just write a book. And so for me, I see them as a film. And like I said earlier, I really do see it as a film that plays out in my mind, and I try to put that down on paper as best as I can.
Mm.
And so those characters, as I go through the story and it becomes more in-depth and I start exploring what their backstory might be, how the reasons why they act the way they do, how they came to be that person, which is also, I would say, one of the other wonderful benefits that I personally gained as an author, and that is observing. And really fully understanding that person who seems rude to you at, in a customer service situation or cuts you off for some reason, it seems irrational and rude, and it it's really helped me take a step back and be patient and think, you know what, you never know what that person went through that day or what they went through in their life to make them the way they are, to act that way. And I think that it stays very true to characters in books.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because you mentioned earlier you'd interviewed so many veterans, when you talk to people, you know, it's, I learned as a young kid, when I used to work with my parents, and I learned not to dismiss people because they looked a certain way or they were, you know, old, because I was 10.
Absolutely. Because, that could be 50, right?
Right. Could have been 20.
Right.
But, you know, because they have such interesting stories to tell when you actually sit down and really listen to them.
Absolutely. I think that generation is, I'm so sad that we're losing them so quickly, and which is why I also find it so important to hopefully help in any way possible, even in a small way, to help pass their stories along. I think there's so much to be learned from them because they are so humble. And when you ask any of them, you know, what was it like to fight in World War II and to be so decorated, and they come back and every one of them I've experienced will tell you, I did nothing special. The heroes were the ones that did not right. come home. Right. I was just doing my job. And I think there's a lot to learn from that. I think today's society, we are so accustomed to wanting the overnight fame and to being on the American Idols and being judges of having some part in that overnight success.
Yes.
And rather than just doing our jobs and working for those accolades, and the accolades just being a side benefit, not the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought of my grandfather and my grandparents when I read your book, and my grandfather lied about his age in the First World War because he wanted to go fight, and he won a medal for bravery, but he was deaf in one ear. He got shot in his ear. So there's a lot we can learn from these people. Your books are really great stories. You're a great storyteller, great writer. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, one thing that I'd love to share, which I just remembered, I tend to forget this sometimes, is that the story and the contemporary parts of The Pieces We Keep actually take place in Oregon and Washington. So that was really fun for me to finally be smart and set it in a city that I know so well and be able to pay tribute to really my stomping ground.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. The other thing, too, that is always fun is that if you read one of my novels, like Letters from Home, there are actually characters that always make cameos in the other novels. So there's a character from Letters from Home that pops back up in The Pieces We Keep, and yet he ends up showing up the way that he is before the war rather than after, and you really see how different he is.
Right, right.
So that's, I think, fun for the reader, I hope.
Well, Christina McMorris, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I thank you for joining us today. I want to let listeners know that you've got some great stuff up on your website. You've got some history, World War II history trivia, and some of those letters that your grandfather wrote to your grandmother, if somebody wants to go take a look at those. And your website is ChristinaMcMorris.com. You can find her at ChristinaMcMorris.com. And Christina's new book is called The Pieces We Keep. Thank you, Christina, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Elizabeth Galen Baker, award-winning filmmaker and author. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to New Pro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 22nd, it's our official Christmas show. And our gift to you, harmonic energy healers Dr. Jude and Paul Ponton from Whispering Dragon will be in the studio along with their tuning forks, brass bowls, and bells to do remote healings for you and your animal friends. When you give us a call, so plan to join us, Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live, we're going to kick back and share holiday traditions, trivia, and Christmas music from around the globe. If you'd like to share your traditions, email info@conversationslive.net. Hope you can join us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m., 98.9 HD Channel 3.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. My next guest is award-winning writer and filmmaker Elizabeth Galen Baker. She's worked on 11 independent films in Los Angeles before writing and directing her first documentary, When Buffalo Roam, and that has a life of its own. We're going to talk about that. That film was narrated by Peter Coyote. It won the Best Social Documentary Short of 1999 at the New York International Independent Film and Video Festival. Elizabeth's next project was a feature-length documentary called The Trail of Painted Ponies. That was narrated by Ali McGraw and judged by Sony Classics in New York. It won Best Documentary at the White Sands Film Festival of 2005. And Elizabeth Galen Baker won Best Woman Director. And it's also aired on in New York on PBS. Elizabeth is currently completing her third documentary, For They Know Not What They Do, a cautionary tale of the dangers of climate change and the huge costs of cheap energy. And that film will be released in 2014. She's also the author of Gifts of Gratitude, The Joyful Adventures of a Life Well Lived. Elizabeth Galen Baker, welcome to the show.
Oh, Vicki, what a wonderful intro. Thank you so much. I love being here with you.
And I can say that after researching a little bit, just a little bit of what you've been up to, you certainly have a life well lived. And we're pleased to have you here with us today. I was complaining during the break. I've only had 2 hours sleep last night and my brain's not functioning properly. I've been running on fumes the last couple of weeks. But and you said you were in the edit bay, and that in itself is a no sleep kind of process, isn't it?
It's just nonstop, and you don't spend that much time in the edit bay as you do sitting at 4 o'clock in the morning at looking at footage on your computer. But for me, that part is long and arduous, but for me, putting a sizzle reel together, and I've been invited to bring one to Sundance, putting a sizzle reel together is just exhilarating. Just exhilarating.
Because
the people that we've interviewed for this movie, they are so knowledgeable. They are so articulate. They are so kind-hearted. It's, like, very exciting.
Yeah. Tell people who don't know what a sizzle reel is.
A sizzle reel is like a trailer. It's not really a trailer because the movie's not finished yet. But it's enough. It's 2.5 to 3 minutes. And it's something that you show to people to get them interested in the film that's being made.
So I want to begin, Elizabeth, by just talking a little bit about your book, because there are some lovely stories in here. And I know you're a big proponent of story, as was my first guest. You know, story is important in our lives. Why do you think, you made a comment that you think story will save us? Just talk a little about that, if you would.
Well, you know, what we're calling the film is We Know Not What We Do. And I believe that that's true. And I believe that the only way that we can possibly wake up to what we're doing right now, or what we've always done to each other and to the planet, is by story. Really, when you hear a story, you're able to grasp something. Like, all of the stories in Gifts of Gratitude are true, and I'm in them, but they're not about me. They're about a certain subject. And by reading, they're not preachy at all. It's not a how-to book. It's just about the path I follow. But somebody out there reading the book may want to follow that path, and they would be able to do it much better by that kind of guidance rather than a class or, you know, one more seminar or whatever.
Right, right. You say that in some ways the title of the book, Gifts of Gratitude, is a misnomer, because the only real gift that comes from that our attitude of gratitude is grace. Talk to us a little bit about what you mean by grace.
Oh, my goodness. You know, some people call grace luck. Some people, but I have come finally to know that it's not luck, it's grace. And if you're able to stay in the now and you're really able to live by the laws of the universe, and the biggest first law that I know is gratitude, gratitude for our lives, gratitude for the breath, gratitude for each other, pure gratitude. And if we're able to stay focused on that, somehow, magically, the universe starts playing with you, giving you signs, giving you signals, giving you open doors that you might never have thought of opening yourself. I still don't understand why. I only know that it's true.
Right. Your first story actually is very moving. It's about a brother-in-law who comes home from the war with his new girlfriend. You're driving out in California with your husband, and there's an accident. But earlier in the day, you had said, "Dear Lord, how do I thank you? If I die today, I've had it all." You were so grateful that, you know, all of the family was together, they were all safe. And at that moment, you say you surrendered to spirit. Talk to us a little bit about that story, if you would.
Well, you know, I still wonder, and now I've written a book about it, and I still wonder about what really happened that day. That's the point of mystery that I don't think any of us understand. But that is exactly, that's how I really learned the lesson of gratitude, because I said the prayer of gratitude for my life before anything happened to really threaten my life. And my life was spared, and I believe that it was spared because of that prayer. I've always thought that it was spared, and my three-year-old son, the man I was married to at the time, and two other people, all spared through miraculous. I mean, it's miraculous that anyone lived through that accident, and yet we were all spared, and I believe it was the force of gratitude.
Mm. You say all of your life you dreamed of making movies. So when your sons left home, you tried for 3 years to get a job as a production assistant. So this is an interesting story in itself, because, you know, most people think, oh, if you want to make movies, you've got to get in as an, you know, as a kid and work your way up. So talk to us a little bit about that time in your life and why you tried to get into movies.
Well, I had always wanted to tell stories. I'd always wanted to make movies, and I just thought it would be in another lifetime. I had had a three-year time in New York before I married and stayed home and raised my sons, that where I was in front of a camera and performing and whatnot, but I didn't have any idea how to get on a movie set. And I was competing against 20-year-olds or 22-year-olds who had just graduated from film schools, very expensive film schools,
right,
in L.A.
Right.
So what were the chances? But all of a sudden, through this kind of miraculous thing, my hairdresser's ex-boyfriend's wife came to town and was making a movie and needed a production assistant. And I got the job. And I got the job because he told her that if I didn't get into the movie industry, I was going to jump off the bridge. So, you know, I mean, it was just a sheer fluke. And
right.
I can't remember if I was making $50 a day or $50 a week and 18-hour days. But mm-hmm. within 2 weeks, I had become assistant to the director. And on the next one that he made, I was UPM, which is a unit production manager, which is in charge of the entire production. And then I got trained as a script supervisor. So during those 11 films, I was able to learn to make films, and I didn't start until both my boys went off to college.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. You joke in the book, and I'm sure it was a joke. I'm sure they weren't as bad as this, but you say you worked on 11 of the worst independent feature films ever made.
Well, they weren't pornography, I can tell you that, but they were very good. And again, it only brought me to an understanding of, if we're going to spend a month making a movie and spend, you know, a couple of million dollars for a low-budget film, let's make a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make one that really inspires people. One of mine was called Body Parts. You know what I mean? And they were killing people in the alley in order
right.
to sell body parts. There's just a lot of choices. And in fact, I took a friend to see another producer who I admired to see one of the films, and he said to me at the end of it, "Well, congratulations, you just made one of the worst movies ever made."
Oh, well, you know, you say, and this is a quote, you had LA dreams, but Spirit had other plans. So once again, Spirit intervened here for you. And after several years of struggling in Hollywood, you decided to make a documentary film. You said an Indian elder came to you, Floyd Hand. Tell us about that story. It's an interesting story.
Oh, well, it was very interesting because the phone rang at 6 o'clock in the morning, and Floyd looks for Buffalo Hand, told me that he had just gotten a message from the Star Children circling the planet in a spaceship, and that they had told him to call me and to tell me that it was my responsibility to help save that last buffalo herd at Yellowstone National Park. Now, imagine getting a phone call like that out of the blue. But when he read me what he said they had said about all of our responsibility about taking care and communicating properly with the animals that we were given on this planet to take care of, it just had a transformational effect on my brain, and I just hung up the phone and immediately started a documentary film. I had no money. It wasn't about that. I wasn't hired. I just was inspired, and I started making a film called When Buffalo Roam that has now gone all the way to Washington, inspired Native American people to march across the country, really, really helped to preserve that last wild herd of bison at Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about that film because, you know, it was filmed at the end of the 1990s, but it has a life of its own. I mean, it's still going on. It's still making a difference. It's a very short film. You took 44 hours of footage and cut it down to about 9 minutes, I believe. Available on YouTube if people want to watch it. But it's taken on a life of its own almost, and it is making a difference. So tell us a little bit about the journey of the actual film.
Oh, well, it was amazing because I graced into, I'm not going to say I lucked into, but I graced into a wonderful film crew. We all went to Yellowstone, and I had never directed before, and they were a polished film crew. So you can imagine every day I felt like a little girl, the picture of the little girl putting her arm around the elephant. but it was exciting. My kids had given me lessons on what to do in case anyone tried to bully me because I was there with a camera. Someone did threaten my life with a gun, and I made myself laugh because I just went right into their face and said that the district attorney had asked me to please get the name of everybody threatening me for making this film because if anything happened to me, he wanted to know exactly where those threats were coming from. And that person with the gun, he had a rifle, he just dropped it by his side and went and got immediately in his car and drove away. It was amazing, and particularly for me, I had never been to Yellowstone, and I had never seen a live buffalo, not in this lifetime anyway. And yet there was such a feeling of there was such an aura of deep appreciation in me for these animals, and they had just killed 1,185 in a 3-month time and left them by the side of the road because they had wandered out of Yellowstone during the winter. Now, since then, yes, there's still a lot going on, and yes, the Department of Livestock is still harassing the bison and whatnot, but they've never killed that number again.
Yeah.
You know, they'll maybe kill 5 or 3 or 13 or 30 in a winter, but never 1,185. I just found that horrific.
Yeah, well, I found that film very enlightening, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the latest film you're working on.
Thank you.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Elizabeth Galen Baker. Her book, Gifts of Gratitude, The Joyful Adventures of a Life Well Lived. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Pat Pauley. Tune into my show, Get Active, each Tuesday at 12 noon on Alternative Talk 1150. Each week, we invite a guest to talk about one of the wonderful activities in the Puget Sound region, ones that you may want to participate in. We'll focus on how adult beginners can comfortably get into all of these activities. You'll learn a lot about how you can get active. Be sure to listen. That's Get Active with me, Pat Pauley, at 12 noon each Tuesday on Alternative Talk 1150.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every 4 children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Next week on Conversations Live, we're going to kick back and share holiday traditions, trivia, and Christmas music from around the globe. If you'd like to share your traditions, email info@conversationslive.net. Hope you can join us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m., 98.9 HD Channel 3.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is award-winning filmmaker of When Buffalo Roam and also the Trail of the Painted Horses, Elizabeth Galen Baker. Her book is called Gifts of Gratitude, The Joyful Adventures of a Life Well Lived. And Elizabeth, because we don't have too much time left, I want to talk about the film you're currently working on, because the work you've done in your book here in When the Buffalo Roam, I mean, it's really made a difference on so many different levels. So tell us about the film right now. And this is not a talking heads kind of film. It's about a subject which gets a lot of criticism. You've got the people who go, well, yes, obviously we have climate change. You've got people who go, rubbish, you know, the climate's always been changing. Nothing different is happening. You want to tell this through story, through poetry. Tell us a little bit about how this is coming together.
Well, it's just marvelous to have this kind of creative concoction, is what I'm thinking of it, with poetry and with music and with beautiful pictures of mountains that no longer exist because of mountaintop removal and water, which is becoming so precious, and the tar sands and all of these various questions. It's such a big topic that the hardest thing for me was getting the absolute highest, most conscious story. And in my opinion, it is that we cannot make this shift into existence, really, because we are the ones that are being threatened with extinction. We cannot make this shift without consulting our spirit. And isn't that the message of my book and the message of When Buffalo Roam and Painted Ponies? It's really the same message for me, and that is that we have to make a shift. We have to make a shift in our consciousness if we want to live on this planet.
Absolutely. And the same with Buffalo Roam, and you said your book and this film now. It's not just, you're not just lamenting like the loss of buffalo. You're not just lamenting the loss of, you know, the difference in climate change. You're talking about how we're losing things that are very important to cultural society.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?
Right.
That's absolutely the truth. I've got a website up now, Vicki, that's called WeKnowNotWhatWeDo.net, and if people go there, they'll be able to see a great deal, snippets of the conversations we're having with intelligent, articulate people, and the theme song and the movie title. It's really coming together. It's very, very graced. I've never worked on a project that's been as graced as this film.
Right. We only have, if you could get this in like a minute here, Elizabeth, and I know it's a huge subject, but you did fly up to Anchorage, Alaska. You interviewed the villagers in Kavalina, who you say may be the first climate change refugees. What was their response?
Well, first of all, the one guy said it so clearly. He said, "Look out, guys, it's coming your way." You know, they're talking about the fact that the seas are rising, but Vicki, it's so much more than that. Their entire life is changing. There's no more ice. The sea is not freezing. You know, the land is not freezing. The sea is not freezing. But my take on it was that these people know more about being alive than we do in this country. They're not into material things. They don't have roads. They don't have cars. But they really know their people's spirit. And I'm hoping that America wakes up in that way.
Yeah. Well, I think the work you've done in Gifts of Gratitude, your book, When Buffalo Roam, and in this film that's coming out in 2014, you'll have to let me know when it comes out. But I think, you know, raising awareness and telling it through story is a great way. You're making such a difference. Very quickly, I know you have a couple of different websites where people can find out more information. Could you share those with us?
Oh, thank you. BakerTrueStories.com. Easy to remember. BakerTrueStories.com. And WeKnowNotWhatWeDo.net. And there's an awful lot of information. And also, if anyone wants to reach me or talk about these things or for any reason, please look on those websites because I'm listed on both of them.
Right. And a very final thought you'd like to leave listeners with.
Enjoy each minute of your life.
I think that's a good one too. That's a good one to end with.
You never know when you're going to be gone, and your life is so exquisite. Enjoy every minute of your life.
Right. And I'm going to leave listeners with an excerpt from your book. At the end of your book, you say three generations, you're talking about your family consciously steering a tough to maneuver ship through strong winds and high waves toward love. Now, that's an accomplishment worth leaving behind. And I think we'd all be so much better off if we kind of kept that in mind. And also, you say that when the dust settles and the economic slaves making cheap things for us all to consume have been freed, we will again be a country, a great country, where real freedom, reigns, a freedom that will be for all people everywhere, regardless of their nationality, their language, religious beliefs, or their sex or sexual choices. I think that's wonderful. Elizabeth Galen Baker, thank you so much for being with us.
Vicki, you're making me cry.
Oh.
Thank you so much. You're just a sweetheart.
Well, I want to, of course, thank you all for listening in and spending this hour with us. I really appreciate your time. And if you have any questions or feedback on today's show, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net, or leave a voicemail at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And again, today's guest, Elizabeth Galen Baker, Gifts of Gratitude, The Joyful Adventures of a Life Well Lived, and Christina McMorris, The Pieces We Keep. Next week, we'll have a short interview with Joan London, and then we're going to have a little Christmas holiday party, Christmas party, whatever. Please join us then if you can. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.